Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Hasey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. There's Ryan Fitley. Something going on over there, Ryan.
Shouldn't be doing that. Yeah.
Where would you like to start this afternoon? Padres, White Sox. Padres coming off 2-game losing streak. Their first one since the second series of the season. Let's see. They had their they lost a series for the first time in 8 series. You let me know. Where are we starting?
Well, we've said all season that the Padres' bullpen's red-hot start probably wasn't sustainable over the course of a season, and we saw a little bit of that, I think, against the Cubs. You know, just some things came back to bite them. Kind of the same way it did, frankly, at the end of the second Mexico City Series game against the Diamondbacks. It's not been a great week or so, 6 days or so, for the Padres' bullpen. Any cause for concern? And then, Kevin, we can talk about the move that the Padres made just now.
When you're in the throes of it, there's always concern because, like, you want it to end, right? I will say about this, the Padres bullpen, which, yes, gave up a crazy 5-run lead, and it was in a crazy ballpark with dirt that was like cement and air that you needed an oxygen tank. And okay, then they come back. Mason Miller, of course, gives up his first 2 runs. Okay, whatever. We knew he wasn't perfect. And then the last 2 nights, Padres come back to tie a game, or last 2 games, Padres come back to tie a game, and then the bullpen blows it. So yeah, I mean, it's a concern. I do want to point out, it was basically a year ago. It was in May. The Padres had protected their first 22 leads. They gave up they allowed like 10 runs in the last 2 innings of a game in New York. That started a string of 6 games in which they allowed at least 2 runs. They gave up 31 runs in 17 2/3 innings, the most that any Padres bullpen ever had given up in that span. And they gave up 3 leads in those 6 games. And then they finished the season as the number 1 bullpen in most categories in the major leagues. So my answer is I don't think it's a concern. But heck, when you're in the middle of it, and look, they were down Jeremy Estrada, which they're not now. And what that means is that, well, first, I guess that means I should say Jeremy Estrada has been activated off of his rehab assignment and off of the injured list. David Morgan has been sent down. But you had Jason Adam out the first couple weeks of the season. You had Jeremy Estrada out last couple weeks. Not to make excuses, but guys are pitching out of order. Guys are coming in earlier or going in later, coming in different leverage situations than what they, different lanes, facing different batters than they would. Now, they got to do their job. They got to deal with it. But all of this is to say, not concerned.
Not concerning. And again, Yuki Matsui is somebody who could be joining them at some point as well. This bullpen, as hard as it is to believe, this bullpen is going to probably keep getting better here, at least in terms of the bodies who they're bringing up. And Jeremy Estrada's back. Kevin, what's the one thing you're going to be looking out for when we see Jeremy Estrada pitch at some point this weekend?
Well, evidently his velocity is up. So, I mean, that's what you're looking for. And the movement on his pitches, the life on the fastball, the splitter wasn't there either. It wasn't just the velocity. So, yeah, just that he's back to being him. And I would have, just looking at that as like confirmation, because I wouldn't have any doubts about that, because there was no rush to bring him back. Like, you know, I am going to go ahead and just make it what I think is a safe assumption, even though you should never assume that he's fine, because they wouldn't have brought Jeremy Estrada back if he wasn't fine.
Can we presume that this was a dead arm type situation?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the way it's been explained. Elbow, you don't ever want to hear it. Tightness, soreness, pain, whatever, you don't want to hear it. But this kid's 26. He's under team control for quite some time. Right. The idea that he would be back pitching if it was something serious it'd be really strange. Jeremy Estrada was talking about being careful because, you know, he has a long career ahead of him. The Padres are going to be careful with this guy. That just makes sense. I gotta think that this was like a dead arm thing. There are, as weird as it is, yes, most of the time when something like this happens, you fear the worst. And guess what? Most of those times, it turns out for the worst, right?
Right.
There are strange things that happen with the human body, man, where, you know, and then to me, it's amazing these relievers even make it through the season, how irregular their schedules are, how much they throw. It's absolutely incredible what they do with their arms.
Right. And it's not just pitching, right? It's warming up. It's going up, getting hot, and then not being used. It's a completely different rhythm than a starting pitcher would have.
I think it's the hardest job in baseball. Now, I think that Mike Schilt did a good job. I think Craig Stammen does a good job. Sometimes it cannot be helped that a guy gets warm. But in terms of the way that they've handled those guys and trying not to have that happen in conjunction with Ruben Diablo, Ben Fritz, I think they do a fantastic job. But you are 100% right. There is so much that we don't see in the game that they do.
Sure, sure. Kevin, we talked about this before, but we wouldn't be doing our jobs if I didn't bring it up. Fernando Tatis Jr. still searching for his first home run of the year. Saw some photos of him last night at a big fancy dinner that they had on the diamond there at Petco Park. Was not smiling. Now I'm gonna be like those Twitter guys and just say, well, why isn't he smiling more, Kevin? Is it because he hasn't hit a home run yet? What's the latest there? What are we seeing? And are we any closer to him pulling out of this than we were a week ago?
I think I was too early on this because I've run out of things to say. Like I started writing about this like 3 weeks ago or more. And it's like, I never would have fathomed that we would then be 3 weeks later and he wouldn't have hit a home run. Look, the guy is hitting the ball hard. He's hitting too many line drives. Hate to say it. He needs to get under the ball more. I have my theories. I've been poo-pooed by people in the Padres organization. They love his approach, going to all fields, you know, and I will give him this. Yes, has he been frustrated? Guys, we've seen him worse. Like I think he's done a phenomenal job. Imagine this. He's never gone more than 5 games into a season without a home run. He's 30 games in. He is one plate appearance away from tying the longest stretch, a homerless stretch in his career that, by the way, was set near the end of last year. Read into that what you will. Don't know. He's hitting the ball incredibly hard, harder, more frequently than anyone in the major leagues. He's not putting the ball on the ground more than he did in 2000, barely a little bit more than he did in 2021 when he hit 42 home runs, which led the National League. He's basically on par his ground ball rate every single season of his career. His fly ball rate is way down. There you go. So if those guys that have, let's see, hitting, 4+ hitting instructors on that team, video everywhere, and they haven't figured it out, like, there has got to be an element of luck. There's got to be an element of kind of mind, right? Like that fly ball, right? You saw that, the sacrifice fly, where it was a meatball. Yeah. It's Petco Park, but it's daytime. He didn't get it as squarely as he could have. He right. knew it should have been a double to the gap at the least. It should have been a home run. And that's hard to say. Something should have been a home run. It was a sacrifice fly. That's what's happening to Fernando.
Yeah. And with him, Kevin, do you think, and now we're going to climb inside the head of a guy who neither of us know all that well, though you know him infinitely better than I do. Putting him in the infield a couple days a week, is that just giving his mind something to think about too that's not hitting? Do we think that was by design to try to keep him engaged on that side of the field because he's struggling? Or do we think that was out of necessity because they needed a guy?
It's necessity with they're absolutely aware of a potential positive of him enjoying himself, being engaged, whatever, because Fernando likes the infield. Fernando has never stopped wanting to play the infield. Obviously, he has taken to right field. They can't move him now unless there is something drastic, like he's their right fielder and that's what they've built their team around. Like to say that he should be in the infield, okay. We're going to leave right field empty? You're going to leave it empty or put Nick Castellanos out there? Because you go ahead and tell me which one's worse. That's just the reality of it. So, yes, something that they were aware of from the start was, hey, hey, maybe this will be a good thing too. But it really is out of necessity when Sungmin Song is not able to start the season, then they don't have an extra middle infielder.
Right. And again, carrying, you know, Nick Castellanos and Miguel Andujar, and to a lesser extent, Ty France, because Ty France plays pretty good first base. But you're carrying three guys who all kind of profile similarly in terms of there's not a Swiss Army knife middle infield guy in that group. There's not a Jose Iglesias in that group, right?
Yeah. Right. There's not, you know, there's not a even a Donovan Solano in that group. So in terms of playing different spots on the diamond, it's basically and being pretty decent at them. You have a good first baseman in Ty France, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Any update or any cause for concern with Manny Machado and his leg?
You know, really think that that owed a lot to that they played a lot in altitude. They played four games in 2 hours, 52 minutes or more. They played it at not only Coors Field, but then 2,000 feet higher in Mexico City. They spent a week in altitude. And, you know, someone jokingly said, but maybe there's some merit to it. You know, he wasn't used to being on base and having to run the bases so much. He was heating up and, you know, he didn't do himself any favors by, you know, having to leg out two doubles there on Monday and also making some really nice plays in the infield. So he's going to be back, from my understanding, at third base tonight as we tape this on Friday.
Right. He DH'd Wednesday, and then the Padres had Thursday off. White Sox in town. Chicago week continues, Kevin. Cubs just left. White Sox arrive. The Chicago White Sox are 14-17. And in markets like Boston or Philadelphia, that might get you fired. In Chicago, that's a real cause for hope here. Will Venable, former Padre managing the club, lost 102 games last year. They at least look to be a bit of a tough out this year, which is something you can't really say about the White Sox teams of the last two seasons.
Right. I mean, you got, is it Muneka? Oh, gosh, darn it. Murakami. But I can't remember his first name. Rookie who played in Japan. 12 home runs. They have two other guys with at least six. That's more than anyone on the Padres. Xander Bogaerts leads the Padres with five. They have solid starting pitching. We're going to see one of their young guys tonight. Is that Bush? They're going to see two lefties today and Sunday. They're just adequate enough to be a challenge is what I think. If you've got a good starting pitcher, and especially the way the Padres have been, letting starting pitchers, it's weird. They've been getting them out of games eventually, but not scoring a lot of runs on them. And then they attack the bullpen. And it's kind of weird in today's game that, that they're able to win doing that. But, I'm thinking, I feel like ever since 2022, every year there's like some sort of White Sox significance to the White Sox because you play them late in the year. Like they clinched against them some once. They played the last game of the last series. They swept them in 2023. It was too late. You know, last year they could have swept with a sweep. They could have clinched there. And now it's early in the season. They're playing the White Sox. It's like, hey, I can't wait to see Will Venable, but like, White Sox, you should take two or three and, you know, move on.
Right. It's a team I'm excited to see because they're not on my TV ever. Does that make sense?
Right.
You know where they're not playing Sunday night baseball, any national games, any playoff games, any games of significance. I'm excited to see these guys because I can't tell you the last time I sat down to watch the Chicago White Sox play. Friday night, tonight, Noah Schultz, 1-1 with a 3.5 ERA, going up against Germán Márquez. For the Padres, 3-1 with a 4.38 ERA. Noah Schultz is a 22-year-old rookie. Was the 26th overall pick back in 2022. Has been really good, allowing lefties to hit just 200 this year. Sits at 95 with a four-seamer and sinker, according to our Jeff Sanders, and has a nice cutter, sweeper, and changeup. So that is Noah Schultz. Germán Márquez going for the Padres. They've won his last four starts. He has a 4.74 ERA against the White Sox, including losing to them a year ago when he was with the Rockies. I am intrigued to see this lefty. Lefties give the Padres trouble. I'm intrigued to see this lefty.
Can you imagine covering a Rockies-White Sox game a year ago? This kid is up. What happens is we see him two or three times in spring training. And so for the last couple of years, you've known they've got these young pitchers coming up. Like the kid on Sunday is one of their, you know, former minor league studs too, I believe. And they that's what they're banking their future on, is having a strong starting rotation, obviously. I think it's, I'm intrigued. I also am like, in focusing on the Padres, it's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. You know, you're at home, you're facing the White Sox. You just lost two. Like, you got to take two or three against these guys. But what's coming up tomorrow? That's a good matchup.
Yeah, Sean Burke, 1-2 with a 3.2 ERA. He already has a quality start. Coming out of 7 1/3 innings as a bulk guy behind an opener.
Wow.
And he's been pretty good. Faced Padres last year, allowed two earned runs in 4 innings in a game that the Padres won. And he'll go up against Michael King, 3-1 with a 2.4 ERA. To me, the story that we do not talk about with Mexico City was how well Michael King pitched. Okay, did he give up a home run or two? Yeah, but I thought he was excellent, probably his best start of the year.
Oh my goodness. Without a doubt, like to be as in control as he was in at 7,350 feet, he left the game with them up 5. Yes. He's the one who gave up the solo home run. One of those was, you know, one of the weaker ones you'll ever see. That just happens. You know, Padres got a couple of those on the weekend too. Michael is clearly trending in the right direction where you'd almost be surprised. He's back to being the Michael King, it seems. If not, he's right on the verge of being that guy where you're surprised when he doesn't go out and give you 6 quality.
Yeah, to start the season, remember, he had a really hard time. I thought finding his feel, just like in general, it looked like he was struggling. And last year when he came back, right, and pitched at the end there and in the playoffs, same thing. Is he just didn't look like the old Michael King. I'm starting to see a little bit more of that with him.
Well, when he came back and pitched the knee, if it hadn't been the playoffs, he'd have been out for 6 or 8 weeks with the bone bruise, really affecting. He had to pitch differently, basically. And so basically between the shoulder and the time off and having to pitch differently, he was basically in the offseason leading up to spring training and spring training and even into the season, sort of just like getting back to getting the feel. You're 100% right. So, like I said, I feel like these have shown us that he's close to being back to 24 Michael King. We'll see, man. He threw 75 innings last year, made 15 starts. We'll see. Like, now here's a guy who came off of his first year as a starter in 24, the year before he'd thrown 104 innings, he went 170, something like that. Is that right? So like, I'm not saying he can't do it, but you know, we're going to see how Michael King goes, because you know what the Padres have done this year. They're making sure everybody's going to be ready for September. So like, might there be a time when Michael King, but getting ahead of myself now, I'm just like saying, I think Michael King has the potential. The reason I'm talking about this is I think he has the potential to be their ace, like going forward.
Right. Sunday, you've got Anthony Kay, 1-1 with a 6.12 ERA. That's another left-hander going up against Randy Vasquez. But Padres Cy Young candidate Randy Vasquez. I say that only half joking. He's been excellent. I think he's been their best starting pitcher this year, 3-0, 2.94 ERA. Padres have won all 6 of his starts. And if you look, dating back to last year, they win like almost all of his starts all the time. Has been really good. Hasn't pitched against the White Sox as a Padre. Pitched against them very briefly when he was with the Yankees, throwing 5 2/3 scoreless innings. I circled the calendar for Randy Vasquez's starts. I think that his evolution this year and the way he is pitching and the way he frankly looks as opposed to the last couple of years, to me, has been so impressive. I feel like he's getting better and better and better every start.
I want to see your calendar and I want to see you explain to people why there's a circle there for Randy Vasquez's starts. Right. But I get it. I mean, yes, like always enjoyed the bulldog in Randy Vasquez when he was the traffic cop, as Mike Schilt would say, playing Frogger, right? Yeah. Hey, look, if you're too young to understand the Frogger reference, I don't have time for you. I thought it was one of Mike Schilt's great lines ever. To then get the velocity and it's making a difference, man. It's making a difference when he's facing lefties. He's so much better against them. Like, his stuff is always been good. That's how a guy could put two and three runners on every inning and, like, you know, not give up runs. And so, like, to see him become, and he's just so like, he doesn't care, right? Like, he just doesn't get worked up. And the way he dealt with being sent down, back up, absolutely one of my favorite stories on the Padres over the last couple of years.
Right. And again, I'm going to say this as clearly as possible. I don't think that he can be the ace of a team that wants to go to the World Series at this stage in his career. But man, he's trending into a really nice starting.
You know
pitcher.
What's interesting about that, Ryan, is I think I agree with you. But if you asked me, like, do I trust Randy Vasquez? Like, let's say they go into the World Series, and because of the way they've had to go, Randy V is their game one starter. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, let's say it was tomorrow, right? Like, yeah. And this is the guy, right? Like, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months. But, like, Randy Vasquez is going to keep you in the game most right. of the time. So yes, absolutely. And then I think you would agree, like, but you trust Randy Vasquez.
Right. He needs a new nickname. Cause my favorite nickname, one of my favorite nicknames in all of baseball, you know it, Kevin, he was saddled with this last year, similar to your Frogger take or Mike Schilt's Frogger take. His nickname was Strandy Vasquez because he was constantly stranding runners on base. Now that he's not doing that anymore, I think they need a new nickname.
Yeah, they do. And I can't think of an obvious one because those were all pretty, you know, pretty obvious and pretty funny.
Pretty obvious. Yes. White Sox, three names to keep an eye on. Murakami has an OPS of 939, 12 home runs and 23 RBIs. Their big offseason acquisition paying off in a big way. You've got Colson Montgomery. He's their shortstop. He's been just as good. 8 home runs. An OPS 831, playing a pretty good shortstop there too. And then Miguel Vargas, remember him, is enjoying a little bit of a career renaissance with the White Sox there. So we have that. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every one of our episodes, and today is no different. Let's talk about the weird foul call that was fair in the start of Mason Miller's save the other night. Set the stage for us. Tell me what happened.
Randy Vasquez has, I'm just so excited about Randy. Mason Miller has a 34 2/3 inning scoreless streak. He broke the, in his previous appearance, he broke the franchise record for innings in a row without allowing a run. He is coming in a non-save situation. They're up by 4 against the Cubs. It's 9-5. First batter does like one of those swinging bunts. It rolls down the line. It just keeps going and going and going. And then it rolls foul. I can say that because it was. And Ty France, third baseman, grabs it and pulls it away. Home plate umpire calls it a fair ball. He's right on top of it, but he can't see. What he can see is that a portion of the ball is over the foul line. Now, there's a rule change, and I believe it was just this offseason. So I'm going to assume the umpire knew the rule and just saw it wrong. And the third base umpire, who later was consulted, knew the rule and just saw it wrong. The rule is the ball has to be touching fair territory. Right. That's the rule, not hanging over fair territory, which is what I think a lot of people have held on to, because there is a rule book, a version of the rule book out there that says that, evidently. The current rules in Major League Baseball, very clearly, and Major League Baseball made this clear to the Padres, and I've talked to people that, and the rule book very clearly states, I'm not at all, this is like one of those social media things where I'm just like, what has happened to the world? Right. There is no ambiguity whatsoever. That ball was foul. A ball has to be touching fair territory. Okay. Mason Miller, I don't know how you feel about this. Does that stink? Because now the first runner is on versus he has 2 strikes. Mason Miller maybe strikes him out. We have to remember, it's not definite he would have got that guy out, because guess what? The next 2 guys got hits. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs ended up scoring 2 runs. His scoreless streak's over, but he closed out the game. Good for Mason Miller. Mason Miller also threw a wild pitch, and he wasn't happy about that. And that's what he was focused on. Did he get screwed? Sure. Okay, he did. But, you know, Mason Miller didn't have a great inning. Mason Miller's human.
Yep. He's pitching in. He was pitching there because it was technically a save situation, right? They opened the
It was a save situation until they scored. See, right. When he started to warm up, like you talking about getting the guy hot, right? Yeah, in that inning, they extended their lead. So, right. And a lot of times now it's become sort of a trend that managers will still bring their closer in four run lead anyway, especially you're facing a good outfit like the Cubs with a really deep lineup. It was a save situation when he started warming up, but I think they would have brought him in anyway.
Yeah.
They had someone up. If they scored another run, he wouldn't even have come in, I bet.
Right. Scoreless inning streaks clearly don't interest Mason Miller. And they don't frankly interest me a whole lot. It's cool that he has the club record. You know, he was going to go break a record set by Greg Olson. Like, okay. Like, oh. I mean,
it's, for that's a what he was shooting for now. Yeah.
Right. It was then a record set by. Like, to me, it would have stung more had the Cubs then scored two runs to take the lead and the Padres have lost the dang game. To me, freaking out about a swinging bunt call in the game that the Padres went on to win. Yeah. This could be one of those things, a bigger social media deal than it is in my world.
I guess that this is the kind of thing that before social media, we didn't know that people in their homes or on the phone or at the office with the buddies or whatever were losing their minds over. I guess that this was, I don't know, like, or are we more prone to lose our minds now because we're egged on by everybody else on social media? But yeah, I was shocked at what was directed at me, the questions or then the accusations or the fact that I didn't know the rule book when it was that, in fact, the person that was telling me that I didn't know the rule book who didn't know the rule book. Yeah. And I understand because there is an old rule book that says that. Anyway, and I wasn't participating, but we were all kind of arguing about something that didn't matter.
Right. It mattered in the moment, but it didn't change the outcome.
And it's super interesting. And we could talk about it for one day, but the fact that I was still fielding questions about it a day later and not on a podcast, because this is the perfect place to talk about it, but that people were still, as of yesterday, seemed to be a little upset about it. Hey, all right, more power to you. Bring the passion. Yeah, like you said, if they'd scored five runs and taken the lead and forced the Padres to bat again, then that would have been, then, holy smokes. Yeah, I would have been down there talking to the umpire and as a pool reporter, trying to get what was happening there. We would have plastered a big story with a statement from MLB. It would have been, but it was interesting and inconsequential.
Yes, that's fantastic. I think I have a new name for our podcast, Kevin. Interesting and inconsequential. How about that?
That is a great one. Because I think you and I both accept that, like, this is sports, right? Like, but it's super interesting sometimes, right? And hopefully our podcast is. But in the end, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good place to leave it. Padres Cubs 3-game series starting tonight at Petco Park, 6:45, 41:10. And then the Padres hit the road for a very short road trip. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.